Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Happy Monday, Cinco de Mayo. Does that mean something to you, Ryan?
It means the 5th of May.
Brad?
No, not much at all, actually.
I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again because it is Cinco de Frio. My daughter was born on May 3rd, and that is because my dad was lobbying for Evelyn to be born on May 5th because he said it would be Cinco de Frio. And I thought, that's fun. I got nothing wrong with May 5th. Cinco de Mayo is a fun day. But I was so worried that she would be born on May the 4th be with you that I said no, and we did the induction on May 3rd, and that's when she was born.
I don't know that that's a bad move.
I don't... Brad's the resident Star Wars... How would you... I was going to say geek, but I don't mean it in a pejorative way. We're all nerds about something.
That.
Star Wars geek? Are you a Star Wars geek?
Yeah, I'll take that.
There are levels to that. You know, like people would refer to me as a Disney geek, but there are levels, like when people refer to Disney adults, I am absolutely a Disney adult to most people, but in the culture, I'm like...
Oh, you'll cry when you see the castle.
I cry when I see my kid get emotional seeing the castle.
That's different.
Because it's about my child
that's not you.
Created and carried and brought into the world. When it comes to doing Disney World things, it's all about the people, the memories that I'm making with the people who are with me that make it special to me. It's just like a home base for special memories. And every time I go back, I'm thinking about the last time we were there and they were a little smaller. Like you can incrementalize all of the growths and the gains that your kids have made at something like that because, oh, now you can ride this ride. Or now you remember when you rode this and you were scared. Now it's your favorite. So on and so forth. But the Star Wars thing, the May the 4th thing, I'm not in it, and I've learned to respect that people have their things, and if they're not my thing, from the outside looking in, it looks like nerddom, but I certainly have my nerdery. Does the May the 4th thing on May 4th bother you at all? Does it annoy you?
On a very, very surface level, yes.
It agitates me a little more than I even wanted to.
Yeah, I don't like that it exists enough that I have to react, and the reaction is generally negative. But I don't care that much either. I kind of want it to go away, but then the minute it goes away, I'll be like, why'd we stop doing that? I kind of hated that. Maybe they should bring that back so I can keep hating it a little bit.
What is it that agitates you about it?
It's that if it was just about the real nerds doing their holiday, I'd say great. But it's so outside that now that everybody has to pretend like they're one of those nerds.
Oh, like Ender, who says, no, not Cinco de Mayo, Revenge of the Fifth.
Ender isn't pretending, though.
Is that a Star Wars thing?
That is the Rebel Alliance logo, and then inside that is the Jedi logo.
Nerd alert.
Whoa. Yeah. See, if you dressed up, I'd say, well, that's your thing. But when everybody's doing it, I saw one person
raise your
yesterday.
Hand if you own a Star Wars costume.
Oh, gosh.
One hand in the room is raised.
Yeah. Brad's.
Yeah, it's the same Star Wars costume as our governor.
Is it?
Yeah, that broke my heart seeing that picture. I was like, oh.
You should elaborate what that is.
I can never wear those again. J.B. Pritzker has Jedi robes, and they match the Jedi robes that my wife made for me. And J.B. Pritzker posted a picture of him and his wife, and he was dressed as Obi-Wan Kenobi, and she was dressed as Princess Leia with the little cinnamon buns on the side of her head. And my wife and I have a similar picture to that, and now I can't ever show anybody that again.
I want to get to our guest here in just a second. We saw some really good jobs numbers, and watching this president and this administration create jobs that aren't just public sector jobs, that's a huge deal. But we're also watching as they march towards trying to get the big, beautiful bill passed. Listen to Elise Stefanik talking about
House Republicans' responsibility to deliver the hallmark of President Trump's agenda, where he won a historic popular vote. We know the stakes are incredibly high, and we are committed to getting this done. And this one big, beautiful bill, it includes so many important provisions, unleashing American energy independence, continuation of the historic Trump tax cuts, and also adding no tax on tips, no tax on Social Security, as well as lifting the state and local tax, the SALT deduction, for high-tax states like New York, where people are struggling to make ends meet. These are commitments President Trump and Republicans made, and we are committed to getting it done.
So we've been hearing somebody pushing very hard to get these tax cuts made permanent for quite some time. And that's the guy who helped make them possible in the first place. Steve Moore joins us once again, distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation, Trump economic advisor and author of the book, The Trump Economic Miracle and the Plan to Unleash Prosperity Again. Steve, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Hi, Annie. Great to be with you.
How important is it to unleash prosperity again for this administration and Congress alike to make those Trump tax cuts permanent?
Well, it's critical. And I want to, again, I say this every week on your show, and I'm just going to repeat what I've always said, that if we don't get this done, failure is not an option. We'd be facing the biggest tax increase in the history of the United States, probably in the history of the world. You know, the average taxpayer there in the St. Louis area would be paying about $2,500 to $3,000 more in taxes at a time when people are already having a hard time paying their bills. So it makes no sense why we wouldn't. Why aren't Democrats against that? They want the biggest middle class tax increase in history. Apparently they do, because they all voted against extending the Trump tax cut. It's been a big victory. We've seen, big gains in the economy as a result of this. And so I don't really understand the argument against it. The only thing that Democrats have to say is it's tax cuts for the rich. But in fact, if you look at the share of taxes paid by the rich, they are now at an all-time high. So how is that a tax cut for the rich?
Yeah. You know, I have heard, too, a little scuttlebutt around the thought that maybe there would be a millionaire's tax thrown into the mix. Your thoughts on that?
Well, we never want to raise tax rates, right? That every time we've tried to have millionaire and billionaire taxes or increase the top tax rate for the last 100 years since we made the mistake of introducing the income tax in the first place, every time that's happened, whether it was under Herbert Hoover, whether it was under Franklin Roosevelt, whether it was under Nixon or Carter, every time that's happened, the economy has collapsed and the rich actually end up paying less tax. Now, the converse is also true. Remember the 1920s. I know you were there back then, Annie. But,
just the 2020s.
But, but, you know, that was the era of Warren Harding and Calvin Coolidge. We had they cut the top rate, ready for this, from top rate from 70% to 25%, and the federal tax revenues almost doubled. Then John F. Kennedy, a Democrat, I seem to recall, cut the top rate from 91% to 70%, and the economy boomed. And then, of course, Ronald Reagan came in. We cut the top tax rate from 70% all the way down to 28%, and the economy boomed. And then Trump cut the tax rates in 2017, and people forget, if it hadn't been for COVID, you know, because the economy was flying before COVID hit. So why don't we learn the lessons of history?
Well, politics, probably, Steve Moore. Politics. I saw you commenting on Fox Business about the jobs report that showed 436,000 more Americans are employed by the labor force.
Yeah, amazing.
What's the difference between a Trump administration job created and a Biden administration job created?
Well, that's a layup question. So under Biden, what kept happening is we kept seeing jobs created, but mostly in the government sector, in sectors that were related to government, like healthcare and welfare services. Under Trump, what we have seen has been basically the opposite. We've created private sector jobs, which has been, you know, that's where you want the jobs, in the private sector. When you've got when you've got an economy where you've got the government is losing $2 trillion a year, makes a lot of sense, doesn't it, to maybe trim back on some of those expenditures. So we're under Biden, we're growing jobs in all the wrong places under Trump. Now, it's only been 3 or 4 months, so it's a little too early to say for sure. But so far, it looks like most of these jobs are coming from the private sector of the economy.
Okay. Steve Moore speaking with us right now. He is a distinguished fellow in economics at the Heritage Foundation, as well as a Trump economic advisor. We know where you stand on tariffs. You're a free trade guy. We are midstream on the president's tariffs plan. Your thoughts on what we are seeing economically here in the home state here so far, and where this is going?
So far, it's been very turbulent. You know, we saw a big stock market sell off when these tariffs were announced back in late February and then in March. But boy, have you noticed what's happened the last couple of weeks, Annie, with the stock market?
Yeah.
I mean, it has had an explosion. So every time Trump announces that he's getting close to a trade deal, the market goes up. So I'm hopeful. I'm not a big tariff guy. I mean, I understand what Trump was trying to do, and I respect him for it. I think I would like to make the target China, because I don't know about you, but I think China is an enemy. I think they're the new evil empire. And we should get very tough with China. I don't understand why we're picking a fight with Canada, Mexico, and some of our friends. But that being said, if Trump can use American leverage to lower tariffs abroad, that's good for everybody. So we'll see how this turns out. I would never bet against Donald Trump.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people are doing right now, is trusting and hoping and waiting. One of the things that I've heard this administration say with the tariff implementation, if they're able to get some of the success that they are willing, that they're hoping to get, that people who make a certain amount of money, $150,000 a year or so, could eventually see their income tax go away. I guess that's going to be replaced by the External Revenue Service. Is this a realistic tease for the American people?
You know, it could be. I mean, as I said earlier, Donald Trump and I agree entirely. One of the greatest mistakes we ever made as a nation was passing the 16th Amendment, which allowed an income tax. Prior to that, for those who know their history, for the first 125 years or so of our country, we did not have an income tax, and we did just fine. Then we introduced the income tax in the progressive era, that's gone up and up and up. Did you know what the rate was on the first income tax?
No. What was it?
7%. Seven.
Seven.
And they said, don't worry, it'll never go over 10%.
You've already walked us through that history.
And then 10 years later, they were right. It wasn't 10%, it was 70%. So they keep raising and raising and raising these tax rates. And of course, that hurts the economy. So I like the idea of not taxing people on income. Tax people on what they take out of the economy, that is what they consume, not what they put into the economy, their work, their saving, their investment, their job creation abilities, their entrepreneurship. So, I don't know if we can get all the way there, but I love the idea of reducing, Trump has this idea of reducing the federal income tax to 15% and then making up with that with maybe 15% tariff. I'm fine with that. I think that sounds like a great idea, Mr. President.
Steve Moore, real quick before we let you go, there's part of this tariff thing that involves bringing manufacturing and production and business back to the United States. And I'm wondering, the culture change, a culture effect that I feel like we might end up having here. I feel like my parents and grandparents grew up with a sense of pride in work, and that we have gotten away from that culturally here in the United States of America. If good jobs come back and creation and production comes back to the United States, do you see a culture shift at all in how we've view the effort we put into the money that we make?
Oh, that's a really great question, and it's a really great point you're making, Annie. It's something that a lot of people overlook, is that what you're saying, to summarize what you said, is there is virtue in work.
Yes.
And there is. Work is virtuous. Sitting at home and watching TV is not virtuous. And by the way, do you think people who sit home and watch TV all day are happy?
No. Not with the television they're watching.
Right. Everybody needs a purpose in life, and work gives you a purpose, and it gives you a sense of accomplishment. And so I think the whole idea of paying people not to work through welfare, we're a rich country. We don't want people to go homeless, and we don't want people to go hungry. And obviously we can afford to, make sure that that doesn't happen. But when we do that, and this is a good question because it's very related to the current budget debate, Republicans are just simply saying, if you're going to get these programs, if you're going to get welfare benefits, if you're going to get free health care, if you're going to get free food through food stamps and so on, you're going to have to work. You're going to have a job. And if you're not going to help yourself, the government's not going to help you.
And I think that's the right thing. These are called work requirements. By the way, 80% of people, I bet 80% of the people listening to the show would agree with me. Mm-hmm. Yes, we want to help people. We don't want people to suffer from deprivation, but also you have to help yourself. And so I love so Republicans aren't saying we're going to slash the programs. We're saying if you're going to get the programs, you've got to have a job or in a training program. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that seems so obvious and so simple. And it's great to have an administration that's willing to value that.
There you go.
Steve, thank you for the time.
Great to be with you.
Have a great week, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Steve Moore, Distinguished Fellow in Economics at Heritage Foundation, Trump Economic Advisor. The Trump Economic Miracle and the Plan to Unleash Prosperity. Again, if you want to see the blueprint of where this is headed right now with the Trump administration economically, you can look at Steve Moore, who has advised President Trump quite a bit along the economic path. And of course, he's never been the big tariff guy, but he does see the benefits of it if it were to work out. But I think it's nice to be in a position where within our own party, we can look at something as big of an issue as the economy and have varying different opinions on which direction to go and why to go that way and to agree with certain things, to disagree. It's basically nuanced, which is really what life really is. It's not all, oh, if Trump's doing it, it's 100% great. And anybody else who disagrees, then, you know, to heck with them. That's not the way this is, and it can't possibly be when it comes to the economy. We have to have a lot of discussions. We have to be willing to have agreements across differing parties, and we have to be able to have disagreements within the party. And we'd like to highlight those here on The Annie Frye Show. Ryan Schmelz will be with us when we come back. Fox News Radio, Capitol Hill, and White House correspondent Ryan Schmelz is going to join us. We're going to talk about the journey of that big, beautiful bill. Is it going to happen? How soon could it happen? We'll find out with Ryan Schmelz next.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
The possibility of failure is one that no one wants to face. So I think at the end of the day, we'll get everybody together. We had a great meeting at the White House on Thursday, as the president indicated. We're working very carefully, Trey, to keep the coordination very close with the White House, with our Senate Republican colleagues, and with the House itself. I think that's going to be the magic that gets us through this.
All right, Speaker. First, you have to gain consensus within your conference. You got Medicaid, you have SALT. Are there other issues that aren't being talked about that you also have to work through, or are those the two main issues?
Well, those are big parts of it. And of course, the various components of the tax piece of this. And people say, why are you doing this all in one big, beautiful bill? Well, you know, to remind everyone, we're using the reconciliation process because the Democrats are in no mood to do anything for the country. You know, Chuck Schumer and the Democrats in the Senate and Hakeem Jeffries and the Democrats in the House, they have no interest whatsoever in solving problems. So we have to do it ourselves, and you have to use the budget reconciliation process to do it. It avoids the 60-vote threshold in the Senate. So that's why all these various components of the bill are put together, complex pieces of the bill. But we're going to solve this equation, Trey. We have to. Now, here's the progress report. Good news. Over the last week, 7 of our 11 committees of jurisdiction got their pieces of that big, beautiful bill done. And so we have 4 committees yet to go, and then we push it through back through the budget committee to merge it all together and send it to the Senate.
Representative Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, talking about the progress on the big, beautiful bill. You guys played that clip from Congressman Bost when I was in Washington, D.C., right?
Yeah.
He said that he goes, it's going to get passed. And he goes, it's going to be a nasty fight on the way. He said it's going to be absolutely nasty. It's kind of weird to go into that knowing it's going to be like that and know, like, we'll pass it. We'll get it done. We're going to smack each other around first.
This is actually the process I like. It's a weird thing to say. I've said it many times that I like when they fight, especially when it's over my money, because that ultimately this is all of our money and they're trying to figure out how to hopefully save more of it than spend it.
Well, let's talk to the man covering it there on Capitol Hill. The Fox News Radio Capitol Hill and White House correspondent Ryan Schmelz joins us once again. Ryan, you look good. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. What can you tell us? We heard a little bit from the speaker there about the progress that's being made. They say the bill, the big, beautiful bill, is going to get passed. What happens between right now and the time where it gets passed and sent to the president?
Right now, they have to figure out how they get enough votes to pass it, because keep in mind, with only a slim majority that they have to work with, if they lose just 2 or 3 members, the bill gets sunk. So right now, they're trying to work out some agreements on Medicaid and some other programs like that, especially when it comes to getting the spending cuts that they're trying to get to. You know, they want $1.5 to $2 trillion. And I think the common consensus is the only way you're going to get there is if you reform some of these entitlement programs. So right now, they're trying to work out how they can save money on Medicaid, whether it be expanding work requirements, whether it be some other ways in which they can find savings. They're trying to work that out and trying to do it in a way that doesn't cost the most vulnerable people any type of benefits, because that's also going to cost them votes on the House floor.
Hmm. Can you give us some idea of who the loudest, the most vocal congressmen are, congresspeople, I guess, are? Because, you know, obviously the speaker's out there and he's shepherding this thing through a very complicated job with this slim of a majority, probably a complicated job with even a bigger majority to get something this massive done. But who are the representatives right now on each side of this argument trying to come together to get a compromise that's workable?
Well, in terms of who's been probably the biggest critic of the whole process, it's probably Senator Josh Hawley. He's not involved in the House negotiations, but he has consistently casted doubt on Speaker Johnson and House Republicans about finding a way to reach that $800 billion mark without cutting essential services. So he has kind of casted a lot of doubt on the House, and we already know he's got a shaky relationship with Speaker Johnson as it is. So I think no matter what, if they're able to get this out of the House or get it over the Senate, he's going to be somebody who's going to be a major X factor in this whole thing. But I would look at any of the members from New York, New Jersey, California. Those Republicans are the ones to watch, because they're also involved in the SALT discussions, which is the state and local tax deduction. That is something that really only impacts blue states like New York,
Illinois,
New Jersey, L.A., yeah, Illinois, exactly. Yep. So they're trying to find a way to make sure that SALT cap is extended or lifted in order to get them to yes. And that's not exactly something that red state Republicans are really excited about, because it doesn't really impact their states the same way. But a lot of them you talk to, they kind of understand that that's going to have to be included if they're going to get some of these more moderate and some of these blue state Republicans to yes.
Oh, we love our blue state Republicans. Hey, Ryan, this is Ryan. How much does the House negotiate with the Senate in this process? Do they have a pretty open line of communication as they're putting their bill together? Is it like, no, we're going to do what we do, and then you guys do what you do?
Sometimes it works that way. Other times they have no other choice but to negotiate together. You know, Lindsey Graham came to a big Republican meeting last week and was kind of talking about his, you know, experience as the budget chair and how they're trying to work together. And Lindsey Graham came out of that pretty on board with the idea of expanding some of these work requirements for Medicaid and going through with some of these other ways in which they could find savings. So yeah, Lindsey Graham certainly has been talking to House Republicans, but I think there still is that divide here and there amongst the House and the Senate, because I think the House kind of doesn't really trust the Senate when it comes to finding a way to get to this $1.5 to $2 trillion. I think there might be a little bit of a divide there.
We're speaking with Brian Schmelz. Of course, you hear him each week as the Fox News Radio Capitol Hill and White House correspondent here on the Annie Fry Show. Also, we hear him on the radio at the top of the hour quite often. We appreciate that you follow this so closely so we can lean on your expertise as to the process to get us to that big, beautiful bill. I've heard various dates be thrown out there. You know, as we've said before, as long as they get the right deal done, this doesn't have to be passed until they just finish the year. Is that correct? This is all for what would take place after 2025. However, I've heard them say July 4th, maybe Memorial Day. What is a realistic expectation that the American people can have right now on when this thing could be completed?
So if you talk to House Speaker Mike Johnson, he's still pretty adamant about getting the House version of this bill done by Memorial Day. Leader Thune has been kind of using this idea of July 4th. Secretary Scott Bessent has kind of been eyeing July 4th as well. So I think July 4th is probably the realistic deadline for both the House and Senate to be done this. But like you just said, the real alarm clock doesn't really kick in until probably the end of December, because at the end of the year, that's when the Trump tax cuts expire, which is obviously what Republicans are trying to avoid from happening here, is allowing those tax cuts to expire.
How much? So the work of the people in Congress, the work of the House, the work of the Senate, how much of their time is sucked up by this, that if they were, for every day that goes by, every month that goes by, that they don't get to this thing that will run out of clock at the end of the year? How much time are they spending on this that could be spent on other things? Does this have to get done in order for them to pick up the mantle on other initiatives that they want to see get through with their slim majority?
Well, I think if you remember that soundbite that Speaker Johnson just played right there, it's very hard for them to pass anything because they're going to need seven votes in the Senate for just about anything else. There are a couple things that they can pass without a 60-vote threshold. They can confirm cabinet nominees, which is what the Senate's spending a lot of its time doing right now and has done pretty much this entire Congress. They can pass rescissions packages that the White House will send to them, which are pretty much spending cuts or even codifications of some of the executive orders that DOGE has proposed out there. And then also, you know, they pass a lot of bills in the House side, and a lot of it gets kind of hung up in the Senate because Senate floor time is very limited. But this is probably, I would say, their main priority right now is trying to get this one big, beautiful bill done. Now, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, there is one thing they could be doing if they didn't have to worry about the one big, beautiful bill, and that's actually funding the government. President Trump just proposed his actual budget, which is the one that's going to fund the government starting in early October. They wanted to do the full-on appropriations process this Congress, which is passing 12 individual spending bills that would fund the entire government. Well, normally they start that process like October, November. We're now in May and they haven't gotten to that process just yet. So they're on the clock with this one. And yes, when they're focusing on the reconciliation, the one big, beautiful bill process, that's one extra day every single day that they could be focusing on getting the actual budget process done for fiscal year 2026.
Ryan, we keep hearing about that this is about getting the Trump agenda funded. What specifically is it that Trump either can't do now until they pass that, or that he will be able to once they do pass that bill?
Well, a lot of it is making those spending cuts into law. You know, they want $1.5 to $2 trillion in spending cuts. So a lot of the stuff, and I think Speaker Johnson alluded to this, you can't do without 60 votes in the Senate. Well, with the budget with the one big, beautiful bill, you only need 50 votes. So they're going to try to put as much in there as possible. And I think a lot of the big policy items that aren't being talked about as much, because a lot of the focus is on Medicaid and spending cuts and taxes, but a lot of the big focus is going to be, or a lot of the big policy victories potentially are in energy. there's going to be a lot of different energy bills that are probably put into this reconciliation package that probably just aren't getting that much attention. But when you talk about also the tax policy ideas, you know, whether it's no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, just some of the agenda items President Trump has thrown out there, you know, he's not going to be able to get 60 votes in the Senate on these standalone bills. So when you clump it all together in the one big, beautiful bill process, then you're able to pass all of these things at one time. And yes, this might look like an omnibus, which a lot of Republicans have criticized over the years, but they really don't have any other option for passing legislation without a 60-vote threshold.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ryan Schmelz, we're grateful for you today. Thank you for being with us and walking us through the latest in the big, beautiful bill pursuit. The last question I have for you, I heard Trump in a soundbite, and I can't remember if I was listening to Fox News when I heard this or whatever. He said that he and I think Speaker Johnson were trying to come up with a name for this thing, and they were kind of landing somewhere around the idea of just calling it officially the big, beautiful bill. I was wondering if you had any thought, any news on that.
Well, yeah, I haven't heard that, but I will say this. Now that President Trump has proposed his actual budget, and we're also talking about the budget resolution, calling it one big, beautiful bill has made this extremely easy to break down for people and to explain to people, because it could get a little confusing, especially when you're trying to separate the two. So knowing that there is an actual budget and then there is the one big, beautiful bill does make it a little bit easier to explain.
Yeah, Ryan, you speak a different language than a lot of the American people who are funding these things speak, which is why we're so grateful that you're here with us. I try to ask some super basic questions, and that's for people like me who are like, wait, say that again? Explain that one more time? We're grateful for you, Ryan. Thank you for lending us your expertise. We're going to have you back next week, hopefully. Thanks for being here.
Yeah. Sounds good, Annie. Thank you.
Thank you. Talk to you soon. Ryan Schmelz, our friend on Capitol Hill. Always good to talk to him. Isn't it weird how complicated the process is? That it's go right over people's heads, and you start listening to the explanation of these things, you kind of go cross-eyed, and you're like, I don't, I'm going to do Wordle.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
It is too bad. And here's what's really bad, is that those of us who cover this all the time, I mean, we talk about this stuff all the time. We talk with Ryan at least once a week, and there are still terms that I go, oh, omnibus, and I got to go real deep into the files to find, oh, what's that mean? And with you in Congress, you know, I'm glad that you know what's going on, but the average person doesn't know what in the world you're doing, Congress.
It's just very... it's so soupy. Like, you get into it and you think you grab a hold of something, but then all of a sudden, it's not as simple as, hey, here's a thing on a piece of paper. Everybody in favor of this? Oh, the most of you are? Good. It passes the House. But we need a little bit more in the Senate. It's a higher threshold. Oh, unless you're doing reconciliation. How do you make it reconciliation? And then all of a sudden, you just get into this cesspool where you're just like, I hope the people who I elected or helped elect know what they're doing. And then in the midst of decades of the separation of understanding of what the American people, the American voter understands, and the bureaucracy that exists, even come the change of potential people filling those elected positions. Now, all of a sudden, you're funding like some of the most wild Festivus Rand Paul list of things that we have now doged. It's like, the question is, how do you get to here? Well, that's how you get there.
What's not surprising to me is that Doge is finding this stuff. It's that I think still a year from now, they're going to keep finding that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
That's how much it's buried into all these different agencies.
Yeah. Well, what we need to do is make sure that people are being educated on this as they are going through school so that you understand how things work. And also so that you care about it. I've got a clip that you are not going to want to miss on the other side of this break from a teenage girl who gets her first paycheck. You're going to want to watch this on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. You're going to want to listen to it on 97.1 FM Talk. And if you do stop by the YouTube channel, come vote in our poll and tell us, did you vote for this? Yes, you voted for this. No, you didn't vote for Trump at all. No, you didn't vote for this because you voted for Trump, but you're not happy. Or no, you didn't vote for Trump, but you are happy. One, you got to fall in there somewhere. And you got to let us know why you voted the way you did on the Annie Fry YouTube channel. We'll be right back.
How can advertising on TikTok help jumpstart sales for your small business?
Thanks to TikTok ads, I was able to open up a business with my childhood friend, get a warehouse, and even hire employees.
My name is Julian, and I am one of the founders of the Snacks Lab. We are an exotic snack company. We had over $100,000 in sales from our TikTok ads in the first month. So our orders went from 5 a day to over 250 orders a day. You definitely have to use TikTok ads, and you gotta start now.
Head over to getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed, because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
MLB.TV is home to baseball's biggest stars. Watch every out-of-market game, live or on demand.
He got it! Woo! This is unbelievable!
Plus, you'll get 24/7 access to MLB Network. Stream every big pitch.
He struck him out!
Every home run.
Gone!
Everything baseball. All season long on MLB.TV. Start a free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm Emma Greed, and I'm the host of the Aspire podcast, a show where I talk to the world's most brilliant minds about building the life of your dreams. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Greed, an Odyssey podcast, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
How many jobs did you have before you got a paycheck? Not like, okay, here's $20. Or I officiated a lot of sports. A lot of that was in cash. My first job ever was a paycheck situation where I bussed tables at PK's in Edwardsville, used to be known as Pizza King. I think it was a gas station and it was a pizza place. And then it turned into kind of the fancy restaurant in Edwardsville when Edwardsville had two places to eat, maybe. And oh man, what I wouldn't do for a PK's pizza right now. They had the best pizza and salads.
Did they serve pizza when they were fancy?
Yeah.
Oh, and yeah.
It was great.
Huh. Was it thin crust?
No. Do you remember Emo's Thick Crust?
No.
Gosh, I wish they'd bring that back. It was so good. It was still would be considered thin crust pizza to people, I think. But like Emo's Thin Crust is, people refer to it as a cracker quite a bit.
Yeah.
It was like that. It was thicker. It wasn't like a Papa John's regular pizza or anything like that.
Was it floppy?
No.
Like a Brooklyn?
No.
Ooh,
no.
I like those a lot too.
Oh, it was so good. I can taste it right now. But anyway.
Growing up in Collinsville, I heard about PK's quite a bit. I don't know that I ever ate there.
Oh, it was still good. It was, I don't know, growing up in the 80s, but mostly the 90s, the idea of what a fancy restaurant is compared to now.
Yeah.
Especially in like the Edwardsville area / O'Fallon, Illinois area, because they're just the same. They have all, like, if you own a restaurant in Edwardsville, you better open one up in O'Fallon. If you open up in a restaurant in O'Fallon, you're going to open one up in Edwardsville. It's just how it goes. But there's just so many options right now. But I remember getting my paycheck. I think I made $3.15 an hour as a busser. So it was supposed to be a tipped job, too. So compensated with tips. I believe that minimum wage at the time was $5.15.
I remember making $5.15.
I think it was $5.15. I believe it was over $5. I don't know that I ever made, and I made lower than $4 an hour in that job at $3.15. But it was you're supposed to be compensated with tips as well. All of the servers were supposed to pool their tips at the end of the night, 10% of their tips. And then that would be split up for however many bussers were in there. I don't think that they did that. I have a lot of questions going back to whether, I mean, I would get like $10 at the end of the night and work my tail off bussing tables. But I remember getting my paycheck. I would get my paycheck at the end. I think we got paid weekly. It might have been every other week, but my paycheck was $20. I was also 16. And $20 when you're 16, a movie costs $3.50.
Yeah, I remember getting, I did have a tip job, but I got $5.15. That was like, it was like the best of both worlds.
Is that golf course?
Yeah, golf course. Because you didn't.
How old were you when you started that?
16. I had a couple jobs to answer your question. Before that, though, the only one I remember that it was just like, here's a couple bucks for helping us, was rolling newspapers.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
And I did that for 2 days. I was horrible at it, and they did not want me there. So they paid me.
You didn't do well at that?
No, I was slow. There's people that get so fast at it that they were just they're putting them in those sleeves.
Were you trying to like edit the paper while you were rolling it? Or
I was just
reading
trying
the funnies?
To get it into that plastic. And I was bad at it. And they would know this must be one that Ryan did because it would be kind of like 75% of the way in.
Do you remember when you did your first job? Do you remember looking at the deductions in your paycheck?
Yeah, I think I do. Oddly, though, it's because people told me, get ready, you're going to see how much you actually have to give to the government. So I remember people telling me that. I don't remember what the numbers were.
Brad, what was your first paycheck job?
My first paycheck job was Dairy Queen in Freeburg. So it was me and a bunch of kids from
New
Athens. $5.15 an hour. And I was in the kitchen area because I was a guy and they kept the guys in the kitchen and the girls out front. And so there was no opportunity for tips. It was just what I made hourly.
Nobody got tipped at Dairy Queen.
No. Well, some people did, but it was a rarity.
But I mean, that's not a tipped job.
No.
Mine I don't think they didn't put you in the kitchen so you wouldn't get tipped.
No, they put me in the kitchen so that I'm not sure why. That's just where the guys were.
No, I think would that have been the 90s? That would have been the 2000s, early 2000s.
Yeah, well, mid 90s. Yeah, I was in high school, so yeah, graduated in 01.
That's like the type of stuff that happened where you know, guys did this and girls did mm-hmm. that, and it just was fine.
Yeah.
I would imagine that girls were probably better at customer service. Is it bad to say this? I don't care if it's bad to say this, but girls are better at the, you know, friendly customer service thing. Maybe a little more at that age, attentive to the cash register. And that guys are probably quicker in the back at working with hot equipment and making things happen back there. That doesn't mean that no girl could cook and that no guy could run the cash register. But if you were going to divide easily, that's the way it happened a lot. And you say that in 2025 and people are going to be like, oh.
Hey, I'll tell you what, guys, we could not work the beer cart. That is all girl job.
I worked the beer cart.
Did you?
Yeah, I worked it.
At a golf course?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I don't think I knew that about you.
I was a cocktail waitress too.
How long was that?
I don't remember, but it was Sunset Hills Country Club.
I'm surprised that's never come up.
Banquet server, cocktail waitress. I would go cocktail while everybody would need to eat and smoke. And I made bank. And then they were like, we should pool our tips. And I'm like, we should not pool our tips.
I do remember that story.
Yeah. That didn't happen. Listen to this teenager. I think she's in Michigan. But this teenager, I'm going to play the video for you on the YouTube channel. You can listen to it here, of course, on 97.1 or in the Odyssey app. Listen to her as she gets her first paycheck.
I don't have Medicare, so why is Medicare taken out of my work hour check?
It's called taxes, boo-boo.
Yeah, I understand that, but I don't have Medicare. You pay taxes for the things you buy. If I buy cheese, I buy $6 plus sales tax. I don't have Medicare, so I shouldn't have the tax on Medicare because I didn't buy that. Cute. Like, Social says $7. $7, that's a 12, that's more than a 12th of my workness.
What?
I only get 10 an hour. Oh, no. I did the math wrong. What is a Michigan income? Why are you going to tax me for making money? You're laughing, but I don't understand.
That's what a tax is.
So what was the point? That's income tax. Income means coming to me.
That means income that goes to you gets taxed.
So what was the point of giving it to me if you're just going to take it out?
Because the government didn't give it to you. The company gave it to you.
And the government's like, this is mine.
Yeah.
But it's not fair. $15 in taxes? $15 is a lot for a high schooler. $15 was taken from me just because? But we don't even have free health insurance here.
I know.
So what's the point? So this will come back to me later. That $185 will come back.
Not directly, but you have to pay into Medicare so that one day if you do need Medicare, then Medicare will cover you.
I need you to use Medicare so my money not going to waste.
I can't use Medicare.
Why not?
I don't qualify for Medicare.
When you're old, qualify for it so that you can get my $185.
Social Security is also for when you get old and you retire because you paid into Social Security.
I'll get that.
You'll back you're supposed directly. To get that when you get old.
Like a 401k?
No.
No.
Every time you make money, you pay taxes.
Her face.
Then at the end of the year, you're going to file your taxes.
Oh, and then get it back.
No.
No.
Then the federal government is going to be like, well, where's ours?
Wow.
The audio is good. The video with her face. Every time she's like, oh, you mean like a 401k? And then the mom again goes, no. And she's like, what?
every single person who ever gets a job should have to have that conversation.
There's got to be something in our high school education, like where there should be some, like 1 hour of the day should be spent working. There's this, I think there's a school in Texas that does this, that actually has kids employed doing jobs that the community participates in. Like it could be like as simple as lunch or whatever it is, so that you make money so that when you get to economics class, you can look at your paycheck and understand these things for real. Good for her. I mean, she's asking questions that to us is like, wow, she doesn't get this at all. But at least she's asking questions, and at least she's working in a job and getting to the place where she can pay attention to some of these things to understand how people far, far away from her are making decisions that affect exactly what number comes back to her. She goes, this is my income. This is money coming into me. And mom's like, federal government, gonna get theirs. And she's like, ugh. I love that girl. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Farming's hard to feed the